Welcome back to the Enduring Churches podcast. I know you're thinking it's been forever, but it's only been a week since we've been online and available, and we're excited to spend some time with you today. And Alan, we were just saying that you and I have a lot on our minds. We've got a bunch of things going on, and I know when I'm driving and I've got a lot on my mind, sometimes I miss my turn. Or make wrong turns, and that's kind of what we're going to talk about today, isn't it?
Yes, I'm a master of wrong turns. I always try to show my wife that, you know, I know where I'm going, and I find a lot of shortcuts that take me a lot longer to get to places that way. But, you know, when we're talking about leadership, you know, leadership's an important aspect of pastoring or church leadership, and sometimes when we're leading, we just take these little missteps, these little wrong turns, that if we're not quick to adjust those can really lead us down a dangerous path. And so we want to talk to you today a little bit about some of the wrong turns that we might take as leaders. And I can tell you that Trent and I, between us, we have committed all seven of these we're going to talk to you about probably more than once. So we're not talking to you about things to tell you about how bad of a leader you are. We're talking to you about wise leaders recognize they make wrong turns and we get back on track. And that's really what we want to help you do today is learn to recognize these things so you don't get off track too far.
Right. So do as I say, not as I've done. Right. And we've done our share of wrong turns for sure. And so, Alan, the very first one is leading with an I've got it all figured out mindset. You know, when I was a little kid, I used to think I had it all figured out. But the older I get, the less I believe that.
Yeah, and that's probably how it's supposed to be, right? Yeah. The older we get, the more we should recognize we don't know nearly as much as we once thought we did. And I think that I kind of almost called this the seminary mindset, because when you leave seminary, at least for me, I kind of left with this kind of like idealistic mindset of this is what church is supposed to be like, and I should be able to mold it to be in that perfect image of what I had envisioned and what I'd studied for and what I prepared for. And that doesn't work very long. It doesn't last very long. And the truth is we haven't got it all figured out. And one of the biggest mistakes we make when we go into a church setting is thinking that, well, I'm taking all my ideas and all my history and all my knowledge, and I'm going to go in and I'm going to fix this situation. And we may be fixing something that doesn't need to be fixed and breaking something that doesn't need to be broken in the process. And so there's a lot that goes into this one.
Yeah. Now, these, I wish we had some like crash sound effect or something we could stick in here on this. But yeah, because, you know, I remember, and I've seen so many young people come out of seminary and they go to a church and they immediately think, well, I've got these 10 major changes that I'm going to make. And they don't take any time to listen because they've got it all figured out. And all these dumb people at my church need to come on board and do what I say. And it turns into not only a wrong turn, but a major crash a lot of times.
Yeah, if you have to go into every meeting and you just are going into every meeting you have as a church leader and you think, boy, I'm the smartest guy in the room, you're probably not.
Yeah, that's for sure.
So that is, to me, that's a really big one. And sadly, I see this a lot in just some pastors that are uncoachable, unwilling to learn, unwilling to yield or compromise or ever admit their own failures. And so that's a real problem. And, you know, if you go that route, you're going to have conflict. There's no doubt about it. We're always going to have conflict in churches. And so, you know, I think that the next one, Trent, kind of goes along in this, is that where we view every sense of questions and disagreements as a battlefield.
Yeah, boy, I have done this and had that. And I don't know if it's insecurity on my part or, you know, just, you know, not thinking highly enough of the people in my church. But now the more I've realized, you know, as we've talked, you and I've talked about different personality inventories and different things, I realized that I need to have those people to come alongside me and question some things to help me work out and be able to share in a better way the ideas that we have. I need those people to question and even disagree. It's not a major battlefield. I need to listen more.
Yes, most of the time that we come into conflict, we are making the conflict. One of the things I've learned in moving from the role of pastor to the role I'm in now is being able to look at church conflict from a different perspective. And one of the things I recognize is that we make sometimes the conflict worse by misdiagnosing it. And when someone says, hey, I don't like that, they're not trying to be conflicting. They're not trying to be mean necessarily. They're just trying to communicate what they feel. And you need to be gracious with people and their feelings and what they're dealing with, because they have to process what you're proposing. And so sometimes we take these questions, or why are you questioning me? Why are you asking me these questions? Don't you trust me? Mm-hmm. Well, when you take that tone, all of a sudden you lose the trust. When the best response would be, you know, those are really good questions and I appreciate you asking those. And mm-hmm. It's so much better when we can appreciate the questions and the disagreements that come our way.
Well, just keep in mind that you've been thinking as a leader, you've been thinking about this for a long time, usually multiple days, weeks, months, and you're springing it on the people in your church and they've had no time to digest it. And so they're asking questions, like you said, Alan, as a response to get more information, not to question your authority, your leadership, your character. They're trying to get more information so that they can maybe make a good decision or understand, so they can come on board and agree with you.
Yeah. So there's two of them: leading with an "I've got it figured out" mindset, and then misdiagnosing the questions and disagreement as a battlefield. Trent, this third one is failing to admit our mistakes. And sadly, I make a whole lot more mistakes than I'd like anyone to know about.
We're not supposed to admit we make mistakes. In fact, I had a pastor I met with yesterday, Alan, that was talking about how they admitted from the pulpit and said, hey, I'm a sinner. We're all sinners. And a deacon pulled him aside after church and said, we don't want to have a pastor that admits that he's a sinner. I was like, you're kidding, right? But that's literally what happened. And we need to, as pastors, we got to be able to admit that we make mistakes.
Yeah, if we can't do that, we're in a world of hurt, because we are human, and we're going to make some leadership decisions that are the wrong decisions. I've made them. I've made leadership decisions that I regretted, and I've had to take it on the chin for that. So I think, you know, learning to say I was wrong, I misread the situation, I made a bad decision, I made a costly decision, all of those things are really important. Then you add in just the humility side to say, look, guys, I'm an imperfect person. I blew up at the wrong person. I struggle in my marriage just like you struggle in your marriage. Mm-hmm. You know, admitting our weaknesses is important.
Yeah, I think that helps us to come across and help our people to understand that we're real and we're normal just like they are. We're not presenting a more than perfect example. We are just, as you said, we're just normal folks that we mess up.
And I'd say, Trent, of all the ones we're going to talk about today, this is the one that probably can get you further down a bad road than any other. Because if you put up this wall of perfection around you, you know in your heart you're not perfect. And you know that not all your decisions are perfect. And you're putting a barrier between you and everything else in your life. And it's a barrier that you could never, ever live up to. And that world around you will come crashing down at some point in time, because your failures and your weaknesses will be out there for everyone to see at some point in time. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, if you're able to admit them, you're already in the road of healing in that process.
Yeah, I would agree. And so Just to remind folks that are listening, we're talking about wrong turns, and I live in Missouri with lots of dirt roads and up and down hills and hollers, and I've made my share of wrong turns in leadership and on the roads here in Missouri. And so we've already talked about leading with an I've got it all figured out mindset, misdiagnosing questions and disagreements as a battlefield, and then failing to admit our own mistakes. And so the fourth one, Alan, is not valuing the time that making change takes. And so explain that a little bit. What are you thinking when you think of that statement?
Well, I think, you know, it kind of goes in that I've got it all figured out mindset a little bit, but it is different. I think most of the time we could meet as a leader. Let's say I'm the pastor and I got my leadership team, and our leadership team says, you know, we're going to add a second service and we're going to add it on Easter. Well, we're already into March. Mm-hmm. And so you go to your church this Sunday, you know, here we are in March, and you tell your church, hey, this Easter, we're starting two services going forward. You haven't given people time to process. You're not giving people time to think about that. You've not given the change, the time it needs. Whereas it'd be better to be able to go to your people and say, you know, we've been talking about our growth issues. We need to add a second service. We're going to try one service on Easter Sunday because we know we're going to be full. We're going to do two services on Easter because we're going to be full. And we're going to see how that goes. And we're going to come back and make some decisions and maybe try some things. Guys, we want you to know we're going to be trying some things. That's a whole lot different than just throwing change at people. And I think that one of the things we do so often is we think, well, I've got my key leaders bought in, but not everyone else is bought in yet. And we got to give them time to buy in. And we give people who are anti-change or slow to change, we give them such a bad rap sometimes. Mm-hmm. But some of those people are so valuable to you because they're also the people who are going to keep you from doing something stupid. And well, they're the people who are going to keep you from running out into traffic.
Yeah. And they're also going to be your biggest cheerleaders if you will take time to bring them on board. They'll be the ones who protect your character from slander by other people. And so, yeah, you know, and again, we see young ministers come out of seminary and they try to change things too quickly. And, you know, instead of, and we've said this lots of times, Alan, on our different episodes, that you need to take at least a year just listening and learning about why things are the way they are before you begin to make major changes. And so you got to picture your church. It's not a ski boat that you can turn on a dime. It's a cruise ship that takes forever to turn. And you want to be able to keep your relationships as that puppy is turning. You want to, you know, you got to give them time to come on board and to be part of the crew.
Yeah, that's great input. So Trent, that added to the list, not valuing the time that making change takes. One of the other wrong turns, and you and I talk about this a lot, so why don't you emphasize this one for everyone about this idea of leading alone. It's that, you know, I'm going down this road and all of a sudden I look around and I'm all by myself. And I don't have anyone to kick around ideas with or anything like that. I'm just making decisions and expecting everyone to follow me.
Yeah, the statement that we've said several times is that if nobody's behind you, you're not a leader. And so you know, if you've isolated people or isolated yourself, especially if you're first at a new church and you haven't had the chance to develop a team or get to know some other people that you can talk to about your ideas, leading alone can be a very dangerous thing. Because all of us think we have the best ideas, right? I know I do. And of course I'm right. But we believe that mess. And so, unfortunately that's the case. But we need people to come alongside us and talk us off the ledge sometimes. And so yeah, we also
need people to come alongside us and tell us we're stupid sometimes, right?
Yes.
Don't do that. Well, I mean, what are you thinking? You know?
Yeah, Alan and I, we've had several conversations about churches that we're trying to help, and we want to say that too. We want to shake them by the shoulder and say, please don't do this.
Yeah.
And we don't get the opportunity to sometimes. But yeah, you give yourself the opportunity to look smarter than you are by gaining people around you that will talk you off the ledge, tell you you're not doing things wisely, but have some people that can speak into your life about your ideas.
Yeah, only Jesus was the only one who could go to the cross, but he took a group of guys with him as far as they could go. Mm-hmm. And that's what we're supposed to do. We no one else can fill the role of pastor except you, but you should be taking as many people as far down their road, the road of their spiritual journey as you can. And that's our calling as a leader, is to do that. So Trent, the sixth one, and then we'll rehash them a little bit before we jump into our seventh, is the idea that I'm just not leading. You know, sometimes we can take that turn of maybe we kind of see a nice downhill stretch and we want to coast down it. And so we just kind of stop leading altogether. And I know that's a real temptation sometimes when you're tired, when you get worn out, that you just kind of want to coast for a while. But that can be a really dangerous turn to make.
It really can. And I know, Alan, you've told me about pastors that you've met with that said that they just didn't really want to lead or help the church make decisions or change things. And so this is, you know, we've been talking about young people coming out of seminary. This one typically affects older guys like us, except we're not old. That's other people, guys that are maybe have been at the church a long time or in denominational work, and they just, hey, I'm only 3 or 4 years away from retirement. I'm just going to coast. And boy, talk about a missed opportunity and a horrible wrong turn. This is it.
Yeah, you don't want to just not lead out. It's our responsibility to lead out. And you might say, well, I'm not a strong leader. Then find people who are and get them to buy into a vision that you're sharing and get them to help you. But we all need to grow in our leadership. We all need to take other people with us in our leadership. And we are responsible to take the church somewhere. Mm-hmm. Because standing still is not an option in an ever-changing world. We have got to keep things moving. And a church that's stuck won't be around very long. So we need pastoral leaders and church leaders who are willing to move the needle. So we certainly don't want to coast. So, you know, you can lead with an I've got it all mindset. That'll certainly turn you the wrong way or misdiagnose questions and disagreements. You can fail to admit your mistakes. You cannot value the time making change takes. You can lead alone. You can just not lead altogether. And Trent, here's the last one we want to talk about, because it's something that I know is really important to you and Dana. Y'all have been talking a lot about this in the last year and done a lot of research on it. But it's this idea of leading on empty, that I just don't have any more of myself to give. Mm-hmm. This idea of that good leaders do good self-care. Why is that so important?
Well, I believe, and I've taken some time to look back at a couple of times in my life where I went through what I would call some serious burnout. And both of those times, as I look back now, I probably couldn't see it in the middle of the times themselves, but as I look back now, I'm realizing that at those points in my life, I was caught up way more in trying to please people and make everybody else happy than I was working on my relationship with Jesus and growing in my love for him. I was trying to just keep everybody else happy. And that may happen to you as you're listening to this at times of conflict in your church. If you've made some of these wrong turns and you get so caught up and you're not sleeping because of the conflict that's going on, but leading on empty, and that means not really growing in your relationship to Jesus and having his power, his filling, and the Holy Spirit's filling on a daily basis, it's a huge wrong turn and it can cause you to crash big time.
Yeah, that's a very problematic thing. It's so common. It's sad how many times I've led on empty. But again, it's we know we're all going to make these wrong turns. So how long do you do that? And you have to learn to recognize quickly that, look, I'm empty and I need to be filled up. And that's one of the reasons I know, Trent, you and I encourage guys, you don't need to preach 50 times a week. You know, preach 45, 46 times. Get your director of mission, if you're a Baptist church like us, get him to come in. Have a supply list. Train up someone in your church who can preach on occasion. Do something to where every now and then you are taking some time off and you are actually listening and you're learning and you're being filled. Make sure that you have your spiritual disciplines, that you have a way to get away, to unplug, all of those kinds of things. But we need this so that we can lead effectively. Jesus oftentimes withdrew from the others so he could commune with God, and we all need that.
Yeah. And this really ties into some of the other points about like leading alone. You've got to have that group of people that will speak to you and help you to recognize that your thought process is not healthy. When the people that notice that you're saying things that don't sound like you, or you're coming up with things that don't sound like a good leader, you need to have people that kind of point those things out to you. The things that helped me, Alan, to come out of my times of real severe burnout was a group of guys that I already had around me that were, you know, willing to come alongside me, give me suggestions, help me out, and encourage me.
Yeah, that's important. That's so, again, that not leading alone involves not just your church, but maybe even a bigger core of people who can come alongside you and help you. And the reason this is important, Trent, because you and I are in a situation where we see guys take these wrong turns and sometimes they never recover. Mm-hmm. And any of these could become some kind of terminal problem in your ministry if you don't recognize them and you take the time to turn around, get back on track, and get to where you're going. None of us are perfect leaders. We would like to think we are, but we're not. Leadership is not a perfect, it's not a perfect world. Sometimes leadership presents us with two good options and we have to take the best. Sometimes leadership presents us with two bad options and we have to take the least of the worst.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. It's all about choices, Alan. It's all about being able to, God loves us enough that he gives us choice. And so, yeah, it's going to be one of those deals where we have to make choices along the way. And every day is full of choices. You know, I was just going to throw in another thing that I just thought of, that's a huge wrong turn that I see people make all the time. And that's in their marriage. That they don't spend time with their spouse. So they make the choice to have an affair or a mental affair or a social media affair. And that kills not only their marriage and their family, but it also kills their church. And so, you know, there's all kinds of these things we've been talking about that are wrong turns. And all of these wrong turns can lead to a crash. But if you catch them early, you know, I've gone down some rough roads, some dirt roads, but realizing that, hey, this is not a good place. Then if I'm able to turn around, which God gives us the opportunity to turn around, then things can be salvaged. And it takes some admitting our mistakes, and it takes some, you know, being the guy who's saying, hey, I blew it. Then, you know, but it's still, it's a choice, and we want you to encourage you as you're listening to this to make a good choice, to not make those wrong turns.
Trent, you did a good job of expanding your conversation there while I was over here having a coughing fit. So I'm going to let you wrap us up.
Okay. Well, I can't do the Heimlich maneuver on you right now, but so Hey, guys, we just really appreciate that you would take time to listen to this. That no matter if you're a pastor or a church leader of any type, that you would, we want you to make wise decisions and not make wrong turns. So we appreciate you taking time today to listen to this. And we hope that you will share this with someone else. Maybe you know a friend that is in the middle making some bad, wrong turns, and you could pass this on to them. Hopefully that would be a blessing to them. We appreciate your time, and we hope that you'll pass this on. Thanks for listening.